League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, AI lawsuit warns of devastating impacts on human creativity. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
On this week's show, the RIAA launches the record industry's first major lawsuit against music-generating AI companies. A group of songwriters sue PRS and more. But first, Chris, what was something that stood out for you in music this week?
Well, another interesting story in the last week is that South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, has confirmed that they will no longer be having the US Army as a sponsor on the event moving forward. And you may remember earlier this year that a whole load of artists pulled out of South by Southwest because of the Army's involvement. They were like a platinum sponsor. Also, I don't know, I can't remember the exact words. You know how events like that, they have different categories of sponsor. The US Army were pretty high up in the categories of sponsors. It angered a lot of people, particularly in the context of the conflict in Gaza. It resulted in a whole load of artists pulling out. At the time, South By defended its decision to have the US Army as a sponsor, but they've now said that they've had a little rethink, and after careful consideration, they are revising their sponsorship model. And as a result, they said the US Army and companies who engage in weapons manufacturing will not be sponsors of South By Southwest in 2025. So that was an interesting outcome to what was a little bit of a controversy earlier this year.
Yeah, and it's interesting in the context of the recent decision for Barclays to pull out of its sponsorship of Live Nations festivals, which was a boycott in the UK that happened off the back of that South by Southwest boycott.
Yeah, that hit the Great Escape in particular. So Live Nation own a number of festivals that take place over the summer in the UK. And the first one to happen is the Great Escape. And of course, in a way, the Great Escape is the UK version of South by Southwest. So the boycott of Great Escape because of Barclays sponsorship, also in the context of the conflict of Gaza, very much was building on what we'd seen at South By. The Great Escape went ahead. Live Nation didn't actually comment really about Barclays sponsorship, but Barclays still had its involvement. And I mean, over 100 bands actually withdrew from the Great Escape this year. I don't know if Live Nation thought that maybe there would be a boycott of the Great Escape because of the parallels with South By, but would it calm down? Would the boycott go away? It did not. And as other Live Nation festivals appeared on the horizon, so Download and Latitude, artists started to pull out. And it's interesting when you look at what's been happening with South By, Great Escape and others, because I think some artists genuinely pull out because they believe it's definitely the right thing to do, because they have a big conflict with the sponsor, whether that's US Army in the case of South By, Barclays in the context of the Live Nation festivals. But then I think some artists are of two minds, but then sort of get pressured to pull out on social media. And I mean, in some ways, sometimes it feels that it's a bit unfair on those artists to be under that pressure. But clearly, Live Nation got the message that this was going to be a problem that was going to run and run throughout the summer season. So yes, apparently at Live Nation's request, Barclays said, okay, we won't be involved in these festivals anymore. So I guess for the people who are campaigning against these entities having involvement in music events, success. To what extent it damages these events financially, commercially, how important having those brands involved is in terms of these events having a viable business model, I don't really know. But interesting developments in recent weeks around the sponsorship of live music events.
Yeah, so obviously those two boycotts have proven very successful. It'd be interesting to see if any other brands become subject of similar boycotts in the coming months, even years. But let's move on with our main story this week. Later on, we'll be talking through some more of this week's other most interesting music industry stories, including the lawsuit over SiriusXM's hidden music royalty fee. But first, the Recording Industry Association of America is suing AI music platforms Suno and Udio, alleging that both of them trained their generative AI models with existing music and therefore have infringed the copyright owners of that music. The RIAA has coordinated this litigation on behalf of its members, which include the three major record companies, and its CEO, Mitch Glazier, says that the music community has already embraced AI and forged partnerships with various responsible developers, adding that there is both promise and peril in AI.
Yeah, so obviously Mitch Glazier was keen to contrast those, and I quote, responsible developers with both Suno and Udio. In the lawsuits that were filed, the record companies said that those two AI companies have been deliberately evasive about how they have trained their AI models. The labels allege that both services have actually stolen copyright-protected recordings on an almost unimaginable scale to develop technologies that generate, according to the lawsuit, synthetic musical outputs. As a result, the outputs of the two platforms will have, the lawsuit continued, rapid and devastating impacts because the speed and scale at which music can be generated could saturate the market with machine-generated sound-alikes and knockoffs, which will directly compete with and cheapen and ultimately drown out the genuine sound recordings on which they were built.
So these are the first big record industry lawsuits filed against AI companies that generate music. The other big case in music is against a company called Anthropic, and that was filed by a group of music publishers and relates to the alleged infringement of the copyright in lyrics. There was a hearing about that case earlier this week, which saw it moved to California rather than Nashville, where the music publishers want it to be heard. Now, if you've been around a while, you remember back in the early days of digital music, it was the RIAA that coordinated many of those key lawsuits against file-sharing platforms, starting with, of course, that big Napster litigation in the year 2000. And although the record industry was usually successful in court during the file-sharing days, the lawsuits didn't really do very much to stop music piracy in the short term, I mean, or even the long term, really. But the cases did clarify the legal obligations of the digital platforms, and the RIAA might argue that that helped to provide an environment where legal digital music services could prosper. And it's certainly seeking to position these lawsuits as having that objective now, arguing that going after the unlicensed AI platforms will help those AI companies that are collaborating with the industry. And the RIAA said in a statement that unlicensed services like Suno and Udio that claim it's fair to copy an artist's life's work and exploit it for their own profit without consent or pay set back the promise of genuinely innovative AI for us all.
Now, in his response to these lawsuits, the CEO of Suno, Mikey Shulman, did reference the RIAA's reputation for being quite litigious in the early days of digital music. And he basically said that the record companies here, by suing his company and Udio, were simply reverting to their old lawyer-led playbook. He added that Suno is designed to generate completely new outputs, not to memorize and regurgitate pre-existing content. This is why we don't allow user prompts that reference specific artists.
Now, that does not, of course, deny that the AI was trained on existing content, something the RIAA pointed out when it responded to that statement. Meanwhile, Udio went for a slightly different angle. It published a blog post on its website that didn't reference the lawsuit, but if it wasn't a response to the lawsuit, it was very coincidentally timed. And in that, the company said that its technology only listens to music when being trained and would never reproduce anything it heard, comparing it to a human musician who would hear something and maybe take influence from it.
Yeah, the suggestion being that an AI listening to music doesn't involve any copying, and therefore there's no copyright to worry about. I'm not quite sure that that argument will stand up in court.
I'm not sure. Do they play it off a boombox in the office? How does it work?
They have the robot on one side of the office, and then they've got the radio. They're listening into six music on the other side of the office. I don't know. But interesting perspectives in the responses from both of these companies. When it comes to the training data that has been employed, as we said earlier, both Udio and Suno have been very vague or deliberately evasive, as the RIAA said, about what music that they have used. That's not necessarily very surprising. Quite a lot of generative AI companies that have developed their generative AI models using existing content have been quite vague about what content they're using, particularly those generative AI models which generate images or text. In terms of music, actually, some of the music-making generative AIs, the companies behind them, have given a little bit of information about what music they've used. Some of them have licensed production music libraries, for example, and they've actually stated in the notes that accompany their models, these are the production music libraries that we have used. But there are plenty of generative AI companies who have not really given much clarity about their training data. It's very frustrating for the copyright industries. Another demand of the copyright industries actually is that there should be an obligation in law for every company developing a generative AI model to clearly state to the world what content they have used. That said, despite the lack of clarity regarding Suno and Udio, it's widely believed that large quantities of commercial release music have been used by both Suno and Udio in their datasets. And regardless of what the two companies say about the music that their software generates, some users of both services have noted that it is possible to generate tracks with either Suno or Udio that have, the word that is often being used is, striking similarities to well-known existing sound recordings and to the vocals and the voices of well-known established artists.
Yeah, the RIAA says that users have been able to create soundalikes of numerous sound recordings using Suno and Udio, including The Temptations' My Girl, Green Day's American Idiot, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas, along with recordings by Chuck Berry, James Brown, and more. It also claims that Suno left producer tags in its outputs, with tags from Cash Money AP and Jason Derulo included on tracks that it had generated. And these tags could not be there if the model hadn't been trained on copyright-protected material. The trade group also notes that Udio executives have talked about their model being trained on a large amount of publicly available and high-quality music that is obtained from the internet, which does sound like they basically scraped all the pop music they could find online. One of Suno's co-founders, meanwhile, said that his company used a mix of proprietary and public data.
Now, assuming it can be shown that both these companies used large quantities of existing music to train their models, and oblivious of this suggestion that in doing so, their technologies were listening to music rather than copying it, and despite all of their insistence that the outputs are nothing like the recordings that have gone in, the basic argument from the record companies is you clearly ingested and therefore copied our recordings, and that is copyright infringement. And assuming these cases get all the way into court, we already know what the other side is going to say. We know what lawyers for Suno and Udio are going to say, because they're going to say what every other AI company that has been sued for copyright infringement says, which is training an AI model with existing content is fair use under American copyright law, and therefore we don't need a license. We don't need to get permission from the record companies. That is almost certainly what they will say in their defense. And the RIAA's legal filing already covers that. It's already got a response to that. It notes that under American law, there are four requirements to prove that a use of copyright-protected work is fair use. And it basically argues that the AI companies do not meet any of those requirements. Possibly the most important of those four requirements is the following, in the words of the RIAA: a fair use defense is not available for uses that could commercially compete with or act as substitutes in the marketplace for the original works that were copied. Surely that is the case here.
The RIAA says it's seeking statutory damages of up to $150,000 for every infringed work. Now, without any transparency on what tracks Suno and Udio used when training their models, it would be hard to identify the specific works that have been infringed, but assuming it can be demonstrated that they used a huge number of tracks, the damages could be very big. So, for example, if it could be demonstrated that the training had involved 70,000 recordings, damages could then exceed $10 billion. So, while talking bullishly now, both companies may be trying to secure licensing deals behind the scenes. And that is another similarity with those early file-sharing lawsuits. And while some early digital platforms did manage to do retrospective licensing deals with a little bit of extra money to apologise for past infringement, others found, particularly the file-sharing companies, found that the record industry was uninclined to agree any sort of deal, much rather hoping to set an example by suing those companies out of business entirely.
Which means these two lawsuits, which, as you say, although we did already have that Anthropic case around lyrics, these are kind of the first big pieces of legal action by the record industry against unlicensed AI. And these are going to be very interesting cases to follow as they go through the motions.
Coming up later, UK songwriters go legal against their own collecting society. But before that, our news in brief section with some other stories from across the music industry this week, starting with the announcement that Tom Keel has been named the new CEO of UK Music, following 9 months as the organisation's interim chief executive. He has been with the cross-sector trade body for over a decade and saw off more than 130 other applicants. With the general election looming next week, he says he hopes to turn this moment of considerable political change into a moment to achieve change for UK music.
Over to the US now, and following the US Department of Justice's legal action against Live Nation last month, accusing the Live giant and its Ticketmaster subsidiary of anti-competitive conduct, an investor in Live Nation has sued members of the company's board, including CEO Michael Rapino and CFO Joe Berchtold, claiming that they breached their fiduciary duties by allowing the alleged anti-competitive conduct to occur. The investor is called John Williams, and he says in his lawsuit that the Department of Justice's action will severely damage and injure Live Nation and its shareholders. Of course, Live Nation deny that there is any anti-competitive conduct, which would mean that no Live Nation executives had failed in their fiduciary duty, but presumably this investor is thinking that the Department of Justice's case might have some traction as it gets to court.
SiriusXM has been sued over its music royalty fee. This is an extra cost that is added on top of the advertised price of its music plans, which cover what the US satellite radio company pays the music industry. The fee increases the price of any Sirius satellite radio subscription in the US that includes access to a music service by 21.4% at checkout. No other music services, the lawsuit says, charge any separate royalty fee over and above their advertised music plan prices.
Investment firm KKR has acquired festival operator Superstruct for an undisclosed sum. The company owns a whole load of festivals across Europe and also in Australia, including things like Sonar and Blue Dot and Boardmasters. Former owner, another investment firm called Providence, does retain an option to make a minority investment. KKR says it sees significant growth opportunities ahead for Superstruct and the festivals that it operates.
You can read more about any of our News in Brief stories there and everything discussed on this week's episode in the show notes or at completemusicupdate.com. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, a group of songwriters, including King Crimson founder Robert Fripp and two members of the Jesus and Mary chain, have sued PRS for Music. The writers involved in the lawsuit say that while the efficiencies of collective rights management make perfect sense for songwriters and composers, PRS has strayed significantly from the principles on which it was founded 110 years ago, to the point that the organisation's policies no longer appear to be operating in the best interests of its members. PRS responded to the lawsuit saying that it intends to vigorously defend itself.
Yes, this is an interesting legal battle, but maybe let's just take a quick step back and provide a little bit of background and context. When it comes to live music, the industry has traditionally relied on a collective licensing approach. which means that a venue or a promoter that is staging a show gets a blanket license from the local Performing Rights Collecting Society, so that's PRS in the UK, which then allows them to stage live performances of a vast catalogue of music. The venues and promoters pay royalties to the society, and then it then passes the money on to the relevant songwriters and music publishers, deducting admin fees for its efforts. Because collecting societies only usually issue licenses in their home country, PRS allows other societies around the world, so like SACEM in France and GEMA in Germany, to issue licenses covering its members' works when they are performed in those other markets. The local society then collects the money from venues and promoters, passes it to PRS, which then pays the writers and publishers. And in that scenario, both of the societies are going to deduct a fee as the money passes through the system. And so sometimes people would say that on that income, there is a double commission because, let's say, the gig is in Germany, GEMA is deducting a fee, passing the money to PRS, which then deducts a fee and then pays the writer and the publisher.
However, an increasing number of artists are opting to do direct licensing deals around live music, most often when significant artists are doing big tours. And in that scenario, a songwriter withdraws their live performance rights from their society and requires the promoter of the live shows to license the live performance with the artist directly. Payments are then made directly to the songwriter, bypassing the collective licensing system, meaning that the songwriter will generally get more money because society commissions are not being deducted, and also the money will often hit their bank account quicker.
Now, unsurprisingly, there is quite a bit of admin and negotiation involved in going the direct licensing route around shows, as well as added complexities if, for example, it's a band and then there's a co-writer on some of the songs who's not in the band, so is therefore not involved in the shows, but their songs are being performed. Or, for example, you have a support act who is performing their songs, and all of that needs to be factored in. Because of those complexities, most artists who go this route hire the services of an agency to do all that work for them. In particular, UK-based Pace Rights Management, which is also involved in this lawsuit. Setting out their grievances, the writers involved in the legal action say that PRS has imposed a number of unreasonable and unnecessary hurdles, which it says must be overcome if its members are to withdraw their live performance rights. These hurdles were put in place by PRS, they add, without consulting its members or seeking their approval.
So this all adds to the admin and complexity of direct licensing, and therefore, the writers say, they cannot conceive of how these measures are supposed to further their best interests or that of other PRS members. So much so, they go on, it seems these measures are intended only to try to prevent the writers from direct licensing their rights and receiving their money without PRS being able to deduct fees from it. The lawsuit also takes issues with the lack of transparency about the fees charged by other societies around the world as they process royalties.
Now, for artists playing large-scale venues, so capacities over 5,000, PRS does offer what it calls the Major Live Concert Service, or MLCS, if you prefer. The aims of that service is to make the process of collecting royalties from those big shows more efficient, and therefore the artists are losing less to admin fees and are getting paid faster. And one of the benefits of working with the MLCS service is, according to PRS's website, that the artist benefits from reduced deductions and improved turnaround times with most major foreign collecting societies where they are playing in other countries. Now, the lawsuit also talks about the Major Live Concert Service and raises some grievance with the existence of this service, because it says basically what PRS is doing with that service is treating big name artists differently to everyone else and giving the big name artists preferential treatment. And the lawsuit reckons that is in direct conflict with PRS's obligations as a collective management organization. Basically, in a collecting society, they argue all members should be treated the same. And once again, they allege that the scheme was put in place without PRS consulting its members or getting approval or consent from the membership.
Responding to the litigation, PRS insists that its policies and rules regarding things like withdrawing live rights are subject to a thorough and extensive approval and review process by its board and members council, and were approved by members at the PRS AGM. It also says it's worked extremely hard to simplify its processes in the interest of its members, which PACE Rights Management, it says, has consistently failed to comply or engage with. And it's that lack of engagement that has resulted in royalties being unnecessarily withheld from PRS members for the live performances of their works at concerts.
Now, this lawsuit is interesting because it is basically a group of songwriters who are members of PRS suing their own collecting society. If that sounds kind of familiar, that's because this is not the first lawsuit filed this year by PRS members against PRS. So earlier this year, Blur's Dave Rowntree announced that he was leading a class action lawsuit that claims that PRS misallocates income that is not directly attributed to specific usages of specific songs, what is usually called in the music industry, the black box. And that lawsuit basically says there's no transparency on how the black box money is distributed. And the suspicion is that the policies being applied mean that songwriters are missing out. So we have two ongoing lawsuits to keep tracking, both against PRS, both filed by members of the society.
But that's all we've got time for on this week's setlist. We'll be back with another episode next week, and you can keep up with all the latest music industry news every day at completemusicupdate.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.